Chaya Sara is not only end of Sara's life, it's the end of Avram's as well, as his patira, his death, will be recorded in this parsha. Although we know that he will continue to live until his grandchildren, Yaakov and Esav, are 15, as the Bechira is sold on the day of his death, we don't see Avraham being active after this parsha. According to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Avram had 10 nisyonos. However, they aren't all listed in the Torah, and there isn't a consensus of what the counting of 10 is. According to Rashi and Ramban, the last of the nisyonos was Akedas Yitzchak. However, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the last of the tests was finding a burial place for Sarah. The Sefer Kehilas Yaakov speaks about the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, describing how the Satan comes to Sarah and says to her, "Do you know where your husband is? Do you know where your son is?" And he lays out exactly what's going on Hara Maria and says, "Your husband is about to kill your son." In shock, Sarah passes away. The pasuk says, "Ve'yavai Avram l'spaid l'Sara v'lifkaisa." Avram comes to give a hesped to Sarah, for Sarah, and to cry for her. And the Medrash wants to know, "Meheichan ba? Where did he come from?" "Mehar HaMaria." He comes straight from Har HaMaria. We could imagine on a high, on a spiritual high, from what he has just experienced, and comes to find that his wife has passed away. And the question is, why would the Satan do this? Why would the Satan come and tell this to Sarah and make her die? What was he interested in doing? We know that the role of the Satan is as a messenger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's coming to prove the loyalty of the one being tested. The Zohar compares the Satan to a harlot, to a zayna, who is hired by the king to try and seduce his son, the prince, because the king wants to test his son's morality and worthiness. Both the king and the harlot, who is devoted to the king, truly want the son to stand firm and reject the harlot's advances. Similarly, the Satan is just another one of the many spiritual messengers, one of the malachim that Hashem sends to accomplish his purpose in the creation of man, in the ability of man to shine, to grow, to show that he can stand up to tests. So then why would the Satan start up with Avram after he had already passed the test? He should be celebrating with him. "Yes, you did it." To explain this, we'll go back to a concept which we know well and we rely on this. We rely on it a lot. And that is the concept of tshuva. How does tshuva work? How can we possibly erase something that we've done in the past? What's done is done. And tshuva has an incredible power. When we commit a sin, when we do something wrong, and we truly, truly regret it, and we say and we mean it, that if I could go back to where I was, I would never do what I did wrong. I would do it differently. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu erases our actions and gives us a fresh slate, a clean slate. Unfortunately, this concept works the same way with our good actions. If we do a mitzvah, and then we regret that we did that mitzvah, and we say that we wish we hadn't done it, that true regret has the ability to erase the mitzvah that we did. Therefore, if we're ever in a situation where we find ourselves feeling bad about doing something good, we should know that we're being set up with a continuation of that test. And we actually daven every day for the strength to combat this Satan. We say, "V'haser Satan milfaneinu u'me'achareinu." Please remove the Satan from before us and from after us. Because we know that when we're approaching a nisayon, we're approaching a test, there's a task before us. There's going to be a million reasons why we can't do it. There's something that good that we're supposed to be doing, and there's going to be so many things that come in our way that delay us, that tell us that it's not such a good idea. But even after we pass the test, milfaneinu, before the test, and we go and we actually do the mitzvah, sometimes we can be tested after. And presumably we may have sacrificed to do something good. If we ever feel that regret, that's the test. That's the Satan that's coming after. And what a waste. What a waste. We have to be so careful because Once we've already passed the test and we've done, and perhaps we've sacrificed to it, to lose the schar for doing that test, to make it ke'ilu we never did it, what a terrible, devastating waste that would be. And that's why when Avram comes to the Levaya, when he comes to the funeral, the Pasuk says he comes lispoid lisara, to eulogize Sarah, velifkaisa, and to cry about her. Although the natural order would be reversed. Generally, a person would come and cry first when a person finds out about the death of a close family member. The first reaction is tears. The eulogy comes later. But Avram wanted to show that despite the difficulty of coming home and finding out that his wife had died, and then not being able to easily find her a burial place in the land that Hashem had promised to him, he did not regret his actions. This is also why the word lifkaisa is written with a small kaf, to show that he cried less than he would have, to show that he wasn't regretting his action. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky points out something interesting. He says in the Pasuk, it says, Shnei Chayei Sarah, these are the years of the life of Sarah twice. And the reason it says it twice is to tell us and to emphasize for us that Sarah was going to live for 127 years regardless. The whole story in the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer of the Satan comes to explain to us how she died, but not why she died. She died because she was going to die at the year of 127, no matter what. How she died, this story happened, but we shouldn't for a minute think that it was the Akedah that caused the death of Sarah. Sarah had been granted 127 years, and 127 years were the days of her life. And sometimes we hear stories or we think about things and we think, well, if I only wouldn't have done that mitzvah, then this and that and this and that wouldn't have happened. And we have to know that whatever is decreed is decreed. It may explain the how, but never the why. I read a very interesting story once about a mashulach that came from Chevron Yeshiva. And this mashulach that came from Chevron, I'm talking about the Chevron of before the Tarpat, before the massacre of Chevron in 1929. So he was coming for the actual city of Chevron. And he would come to raise money in North America. This is, we're talking about interwar years in North America. And not only would he be raising money, he would also be trying to encourage boys to come and learn in Chevron. And if he would find somebody who he thought would be a good candidate to learn in the yeshiva, he would speak to the bachur, he would speak to his parents, he would encourage it. And he would often come back on his trip from North America, not just with money, but with some boys to learn. And there was actually a considerable contingent of American bachurim learning in Chevron yeshiva. When the Arabs came and massacred the yeshiva bachurim, Hashem Yom Koim Damam, in 1929, one of the boys that he had recruited was killed, a boy from Chicago. And after that, the mashulach said, I can no longer show my face in Chicago. How can I face the parents of this young boy? It's because of me that he was killed. And he refused to go back to Chicago. He went back to North America. He went to collect money again, but never, ever back to Chicago. It was only years later, once when he was in New York and he was raising funds in New York, that he bumped into the father of this boy. And the father of the boy said to him, where have you been? I've been waiting for you to come back to Chicago because I wanted to thank you. And the mashulach said, you wanted to thank me? Thank me for what? I couldn't face you. That's why I never came back to Chicago. How could you want to thank me? And the father said, I know and I truly believe that my son was meant to die at the age of 17. That's the years he was given on this earth, 17 years. And because of you and because of your involvement, he didn't die of a sickness and he didn't die from a car accident. He died al kiddush Hashem. He died with Mesiris Nefesh and he went straight to Gan Eden. And I have to thank you for being the agent of recruiting my son and bringing him to Chevron and being part of the how he was Nifter. The tremendous, tremendous control of Avraham Avinu at this very difficult stage of his life. This is why Rabbeinu Yonah says that this burying of Sarah, with everything that went into it, the difficulties of negotiating with Ephron HaChiti, the difficulties of finding her dead, of difficulties of having to wrap his head around this is not because of the Akedah, this is all part of the Nisayon. It seems to be an interesting and sad way to end the majestic story of Avraham Avinu. However, on the deepest and most real level, we see a very public person who is involved in very public acts of chesed, of kiruv, of mesiras nefesh, of standing up to Nimrod, of very nearly sacrificing his son. We see him acting in his most private moments as well, as someone that established this ability of being shoylet on our midos for all generations. We see a person who's involved in the burial of his wife, and then later on in this parsha, and finding a shidduch for his son. And we see a person who has total control. Lispaid l'sara, to give a hesped was to Sarah, and only then lifkaisa with a small cough, to show his total acceptance of anything that happened to him.